This is...
Wow! What a week.
What a week. Politrics.
Hey, Tom. Welcome to another edition of Wow, What a Week, hashtag Politrics with Fresh and Botsang. Botsang, welcome back.
Thank you, Brother Fresh. It's a bit chilly today. Good morning to the followers, the viewers.
I'm disappointed.
And everybody else.
You're I'm very disappointed. By what? I thought President Ramaphosa would have taken you as part of his delegation to Washington, but clearly not.
And my brother, I don't see myself featuring anywhere in the what do you call it? Is it the 7th administration or the 6th? In the current administration,
yes.
I don't feature anywhere. My politics and belief in government processes will not gel well with the current administration. However, if I was part of the delegation to Washington,
yes, sir.
Either President Trump would have loved me for being brutally honest, or they would have thrown me out.
Before we talk about how it went, what do you think it lacked?
It in my view, there's quite a number of things, Tato.
Yeah.
One, you know, the lack of diplomatic relations between the two countries. It was evident to me.
As in
The ambassadors.
Oh, we're visiting each other, but we have no representation.
We don't have representation.
Yeah.
It takes a whole lot of work to have a state visit,
sure,
or a working visit, whatever you call it. There's a work that goes in there, and it takes sometimes months. There's a whole lot of work. It's not just logistics, but what goes into the program. So for me, it was visibly clear that the lack of diplomatic representatives in the level of ambassador. Remember, even in South Africa, it's not only there's a chargé d'affaires, but even the military attaché was chucked out at some stage. The American ambassador hasn't taken their position. That's one of the first highlights I picked up.
How does it work? So Botsang is ambassador,
yes,
or high commissioner.
Yes.
And then whether your term is up or you are PI'd, surely all the other staff are still there.
Yes.
Because they've got functions.
They could. Look, there's consular functions. You
exactly.
must issue passports, visas. There's still administrative and normal day-to-day work done. In an embassy like Washington, and I'll use Washington as an example because it's one of those that we used to call the top five.
Yes.
The number of diplomats we have in Washington, I can tell you, South Africans who they, there's over 100 employees if you count locally recruited personnel.
Yeah.
But the number of diplomats from South Africa to Washington, I would not be surprised if they're almost 40, if not more. Because it includes military attaches, police attaches,
cultural
or especially trade attaches. You've got Home Affairs, as it's a whole office there. So it's a very, very big mission. So there's quite a number of people. We have the ambassador. It will be an ambassador because the U.S. is not part of the Commonwealth. It's not the High Commissioner. It's an ambassador.
It's an ambassador.
An ambassador and the High Commissioner is the same thing.
Okay.
The only difference is that High Commissioners are ambassadors of the Commonwealth member states.
Ah.
They are called High Commissioners.
So, okay. So, for instance, in America, you'd have an ambassador.
Yes.
But in Canada, you would have a High Commissioner.
We'll have a High Commissioner, okay, because Canada is a member
part
of the Commonwealth,
yes,
you know, the former British colonies and all that. However, there are countries which, and the Commonwealth started being former British colonies, and then English-speaking countries, if you want to put it that way, or the Anglophone. However, there's countries like Mozambique who are not the Anglophone countries or former British colonies, but they've joined the Commonwealth.
Oh, yes.
It's a bigger group. That's why our representative in Mozambique is addressed to as the High Commissioner. So in this instance, in a big mission like Washington, you will even have a deputy ambassador.
So what happens at the office? Because I've been to the New York office.
Okay, you've been to the consulate.
To the consulate, yes.
There's the consulate, so there's the consul general.
Okay, so there's the New York, because I met the consul general, I think, in 2010.
Yes.
When we had a gig in New York.
Yes.
So what happens in L.A. then? What happens in the L.A. office?
It's another consulate. In a big country like the United States, especially a federal country like U.S., And Germany, and you know, those countries where rules and laws may differ from state to state, it is wise to have a consulate, because what is applicable in Los Angeles may not be applicable
in New York.
In New York, you know? So it is wise to can have that. And you also look, that's the first part.
Mm.
But you also look at the trade between the two countries. South Africa is not a federal state, it's a republic with 9 provinces. But within these 9 provinces, you've got 3 or 4 major cities, which will be the city of Cape Town, the city of Tshwane, the city of Joburg, and then what do they call Durban these days? Trevor, what do you call Durban? Etekwini municipality.
Mm.
That's why you find that the United States, for example, will have the embassy sitting in Tshwane. Because embassy, there's another element, important element.
Yeah.
Embassies are always at the capital city of the country, where the government is sitting.
Okay.
So all embassies will be in Tshwane. Anything else that you find, like they have New York, LA, Chicago, we even have Chicago.
Mm.
And for example, they will have consulates in Johannesburg.
Sure.
They will have a consulate in Cape Town.
Mm.
They'll have a consulate in Durban. Not necessarily, depending on the interest of the country.
Sure.
And I said, sometimes like South Africa in Brazil, Brazil is a federal state. We have a consulate in Sao Paulo.
Okay.
We have the embassy in Brasilia, the capital.
Yes.
Many people had thought Rio de Janeiro is the capital city of Brazil. Many people think that.
Capital city of Hossa.
It used to be the capital. It used to be the capital in the 60s and 70s.
How often did you go to Rio?
I was, you know, it's very far. You're distracting me. It is very far from Brasilia to Rio. Brazil is very big. South Africa goes 4 times into Brazil.
Brazil is huge.
Yeah, it's huge. It's half of that continent, you know, South America. To Rio. Hey, bro, it's countless, my man.
I'm sure.
And I was a single man, so I was allowed to.
I'm sure.
So I frequented Rio a lot because also for consular services. So, look, it doesn't matter how many times did I have to go there to visit our prisoners or do consular work. We had a
how many mules were you dealing with a year in Brazil?
Sure, Tato, a lot. Over 100.
A year?
Yes.
100 mules?
Over. Let me tell you, there were more South African prisoners in Brazil, drug traffickers in Brazil, than any other country on earth. So my hands were full. I was on flights to everywhere almost every week.
But I think the Sao Paulo SAA flight didn't help, because now it's like direct. So it's easier to say to someone, listen here, here's a package. Here's, 20,000, 100,000, however much they get paid.
Yes, yes.
And remember I told you we became victims of that route.
Yeah, you told me.
We were flying to Miami via Sao Paulo.
Via Sao Paulo, yes.
And they literally pull you out the queue randomly and they'll do a body search.
Yeah, no. That's very common. But that was a lot. That was a lot. So we had a consul honorary. Okay, this is another thing that diplomatic missions do.
Yeah.
You can have an honorary consul. And it's not a consul, it's an honorary consul. For example, Russia does not have an embassy in the Kingdom of Lesotho. I'll make an example.
Yes.
Then they will appoint a prominent member of the society in Lesotho to be their honorary consul.
Ah,
understand? Okay. That's what they would normally do.
Yeah.
In other instances, the Russian ambassador to South Africa, he is also an ambassador plenipotentiary accredited to Eswatini and Lesotho.
Ah, yes.
But instead of him or her traveling to Mbabane and Maseru every other time, they will appoint honorary consuls who will be the ears and the eyes of, you know, friends of Russia or any other country.
So how is it determined that we're going to have a satellite versus being present in a country? I'll give you an example.
Mm-hmm.
Friend of mine is Italian Zambian.
Okay.
So he was raised in Bots.
Okay.
But he's on an Italian passport.
Okay.
He's got a Zambian mother.
Okay.
So in order to renew his passport or sort out his Italian papers, before he had to go to either Zambia or to go to Mozambique.
Because there was no Italian embassy in Gaborone.
Yes, because there isn't one in Gaborone.
Okay.
But the last time he went to Zambia to renew his passport, they told him, oh, your file is now in our Mozambique office. So now you must go to Mozambique to deal with everything.
Well, I think that was an unfortunate situation for your friend because they should have informed them prior. Mm, because it does happen to say they look at the proximity, they look at you know, to reduce the cost as well, Tato, not only for citizens.
So where do you send your comrades that have been bad then if you don't have an embassy?
No, man. Tato, if, you know, it's very expensive to run a diplomatic mission.
Yeah.
Like it's, I always tell people, I got into trouble once by doing this because I told you before, I was part of the team that was responsible for revisiting the foreign service allowances.
Mm.
And that was after my 3 postings. So I was about to leave. And I really cut the meat.
So you ate the cow and whatever was left had to be rations.
That's not what some of my colleagues said. Look, it's expensive. I used to tell people that ambassadors and diplomats, I don't know now, to be honest with you, we used to make more money than the head of state.
Yeah.
It's a whole lot of money.
Sure.
That comes not as cash. Mm. Benefits that comes with the package.
Ah, yes.
There was a whole lot of benefits. Mm. I know some of the things are not there anymore. Like when I started at Derek, when I arrived in Frankfurt in 1995 or 96, I can't remember, we even used to have clothing allowance.
Mm.
And diplomatic tools, my crystalware, fork and knives, they used to buy them for us. And you keep them, you don't leave them there, except the ambassador, all other staff members, they are yours. You get 4,000 German marks for clothes. So,
sure.
And they were specific. You're not allowed to even buy a jean or sneakers. It had to be typically brainwashed diplomatic clothes, you know, suit and tie.
Sure.
And the colors, it could not be a purple suit, black, charcoal, gray. They had even regulations on what you would wear to be presentable, which was good for a township boy like me who was used to jeans and chinos.
Sure.
Then the diplomatic tools, because we used to host at home.
Mm.
And then all other benefits that comes with it, Tato. Your children go to school for free, international schools. You don't pay water and electricity.
I was going to say, and food and petrol also covered.
No. Petrol, your private car, you put your own fuel. But only the head of mission, which is the ambassador.
Okay.
And the official cars. If you are not the ambassador, you are using official cars for official purposes, but for your own private. And look, we put a lot of restrictions. One of the restrictions that I was not liked for was to introduce the kilometer radius for ambassadors. Of course, I was jealous that ambassadors have these cars and then they drive all the way they want to. Then we introduced tariffs to say they can only drive within 100 kilometer radius.
Yeah, because otherwise, where are you going?
Yeah, where are they going? They'll be going on holiday at state expense.
How? Yeah, they must leave the diplomatic privileges outside of within the 100K.
But look, I can sit and say South African Foreign Service benefit, and I talk about South African one, was one of the best in the world.
Sure.
And I'll tell you why. It was inherited from the apartheid era, whereby the apartheid diplomats, the South African diplomats, to add many countries because they were represented everywhere, even under sanctions. Because they were isolated, because they were in hiding, they couldn't go and entertain in a restaurant easily, fearing that controversies or APLA or anti-apartheid activists will hound them. You understand? So that's why the entertainment was at home.
Sure.
And also they had to make it very lucrative for them to be outside the country. Because it was risky.
I remember a friend of mine's wife worked at one of the SA embassies.
Mm-hmm.
And they had done a hardship post, I think, in Lagos.
Okay.
And obviously then you come back home and then your next posting is not a hardship post.
Yeah, it depends.
But she was saying she appreciates the hardship post benefits more.
Yes.
That yes, it's not a nice place. It's not like you're not in LA or Miami or New York.
Yeah.
But the benefits for her, she said, make it all worthwhile.
Tato, let me tell you, when I was removed from Kigali, from Rwanda.
Was that also hardship post?
It was the number 2 in all our missions abroad.
No.
I was the second highest paid ambassador. Actually, I even determined, because I was the first.
Yeah.
So I had to determine how much the packages were.
Yeah.
You don't determine from your head, obviously. You compare with other diplomatic missions.
Mm.
Angola was number 1. Russia was number 2 due to the cost of living in Russia.
Yes, yes.
When Kigali came, when I established Kigali in 2000, it was the second highest paying mission.
Yo.
And then they gave me time to open it. And I worked so hard, stupid me. I worked so fast and so hard because I was happy, not realizing that I'm shooting myself in the foot.
Yeah, because now we don't need you. You must
Yeah, move. Now after the job was done, they gave me 1 year to establish the embassy. In 8 months, they're like, you know what? Well done. Congratulations. Choose wherever you want to go, except Rwanda. I'm like, no, guys, let's...
Leave me here.
I'm okay. I hate flying. Kigali is 4 hours flight from Joburg.
Yeah.
The money was damn good. I was divorced. I needed moolah. And then you tell me to go wherever I want to go. Hell no.
Yeah.
So your friend's wife was correct. I would rather have stayed in Kigali than move to Brazil.
Sure.
It was the cut. It was huge. That's almost half.
Yo.
Understand?
And then you go to Brazil and made a child on top of that. Hey.
And then in Brazil, you even have opportunity, you know, to start a relationship. So you spend more.
Exactly.
There was no opportunity.
Exactly.
Because it was risky and all that. It was still, you know, volatile. Now you go there, everything is samba. Now I get less money. There's more, you know, tempting nonsense in front of me. And I had a colleague who was in Los Angeles that time. He moved from India and has departed now. May his soul rest in peace. He moved to Los Angeles. He complained for the 4 years he was there. He was living next to Janet Jackson. The guy came back home broke because all the money went to clothes, fashion, entertainment.
Yeah, LA will do that.
While you are sitting in Kigali, there's nothing to do with money.
Yes.
There was absolutely nothing. The only thing I could do with money in Kigali was to buy beer. That's all. But so that's how diplomatic missions are. Look, it's a very nice career. And look, anybody wants to be a diplomat. I don't know if it's still lucrative, but there's nothing that beats, you know, things like saving. Like when I came back home, Tato, it was difficult for me to pay school fees. And
no, all of a sudden you must become an adult again.
Yeah, you must be a father, and there's no driver picking up the kids to school, and then you must buy a uniform and all those things. I couldn't cope.
No, you hear stories of people coming back from posts and buying land or property cash because the money has been sitting there.
Yeah, look, that if you are smart, if you wasted money, if you are smart, understand? But another thing that was introduced, I don't know if it is still the situation.
Yeah.
One of the things that I was insisting is that people who are in English-speaking countries, why should they go to private international schools? Why don't they go to like when you are in London?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you go to a public school in London when your kids in South Africa, they go to a public school?
I hear you, but I'm also going to say, if you're going to ship me off, at least allow my children the best possible education.
That's the privileges. There's the diplomatic privileges that I'm talking about. Yes,
But
yeah. Anyway,
let's go back to the White House.
What were we? Where were we with Washington? By the way, you distracted me.
No, isn't it? You were talking about the fact that all of this happened with both countries not having leadership in the embassies.
Oh yes. Look, people may undermine that, but for me, they play a pivotal role. One of the pivotal roles is in observing what happened on Tuesday, Wednesday during the week.
Wednesday.
Is there was an element of ill preparedness. Little bit, and only people who are diplomats and who know how things are supposed to sail, they would have picked those things up. Normally, when you have diplomatic relations between the two countries, and they are sane, because we are in an insane mode with the USA as well, so I won't blame anybody. You know that when the South African president, Cyril Ramaphosa, leaves South Africa, under normal circumstances, the South African ambassador in Washington was supposed to fly into South Africa and depart South Africa with the ambassador of the USA and President Ramaphosa. Oh. So the two ambassadors, they would have left with President Ramaphosa.
Okay.
And briefing and talking. Obviously, the American ambassador would have sent telexes and information to the US, what is the situation in South Africa. Not relying on media and newspaper. Factual information.
Yes.
Then when you arrive that site, on arrival, the Minister of Foreign Affairs or the Secretary of State and other embassy personnel, particularly the military attachés, they will receive the head of state and the delegation. And that did not happen because we don't have ambassadors in. And everybody in South Africa is acting. It's like we are in a stage There's an acting ambassador there, you can call it chargé d'affaires. There's an acting chief of protocol. I've been lamenting about that. You know, you can't have the chief of protocol. It's a very, very critical position for a country diplomatic relations. We have an acting chief of protocol.
Yeah.
The attaché there was sent out by the Americans after Ambassador Rasool as well. So we have the assistant attaché, you understand, you know, who's at the level of colonel. And you know, it's all those logistics. But what became also very evident for me, and one source told me that after the meeting yesterday, a very close source who was in there called me and said, Botsang, you were right, because I was texting a lot, even you, I text you a lot, said to me, even President Ramaphosa made a passing statement, you know, to the team to say, guys, we could have prepared better.
Yes,
I've heard that he said that. And it's true. If our diplomatic relations were normal, that ambush of President Ramaphosa by the videos and the clips and the what, not to say it could have not happened, but that's the duty of intelligence.
To know. This is what's happening. There are no landmines where you're walking.
The intelligence should have picked that up. And I said, because of their engagements with their counterparts, because of their, source of information they may be heavy, to say, be ready, this is coming. I mean, that caught President Ramaphosa by surprise. He did a good thing there. Well, he was always surprised, as always. He was surprised when he saw that video. He even asked President Trump, where is that? And I was like, oh, my God. And that video is very old as well. That one with the Buris with crosses. You remember that event? It's years back.
No, but also that White Cross Memorial gravesite, for those that don't know, is like a tribute place for people who've been killed on farms. But it also includes black people, though.
It includes black people as well.
You see? So, you know, the fake newsness of the thing is in saying every single cross there is a white farmer.
No.
Which is not.
And it's not only even farmers. Sometimes it's workers in the farm.
That's
sometimes
the point,
it's families. You understand? It's a tribute. And it's an old, it happened many, many years ago. And you see, that's where the intelligence should have come in. That's where we should have known and have answers for that. But this was just a public show because the most important things take place behind the scenes. That's where you are exposed, and that's where it tells you what is going to be on the agenda when you go into the boardroom.
Having two legendary golfers in the room and as part of the trip, I think was a masterstroke. A pun unintended. Because when you know your audience, when you know the person you're dealing with, you need to also try and appeal to their passions, their likes, and whatever quirks might be about them. You know that this man loves golf. You know that he loves the golf course. He's probably spent more time playing golf in his first 100 days than any president in the U.S. spent in their four-year term. So taking two legendary golfers, and that was a master stroke. My issue is the golfers should have been briefed that in the event a mic is put in your face, what are you going to say?
Well,
because you don't have someone who's going to now, you've taken five steps forward and they're going to take you three steps back.
Exactly.
Because I almost felt like because the golfers maybe were not prepared in terms of what they might say.
Prepared by who, Tata?
But that's what I'm saying, though, that you are part of the team.
Yeah.
Let's all sit and say, Botsang, you are a golfer, but in the event a mic is put in your face, how do you feel you're going to best represent why we're here?
Okay, I hear you.
You know what I mean?
But in this instance, remember, these golfers, were they not four? Because there was else?
And Retief Hosen.
There's Retief Hosen. Is this other one, Rupert, not a golfer? He's a golfer. He even owns one of the best golf courses in Mpumalanga.
Johan.
Johan Rupert, yes. He is a golfer. And Gary was, he was...
Gary Player is too old to have traveled.
But there was another one. There was the fourth golfer who was there. Remember, this was not... And this is where also there were cracks in the whole thing. This was not President Ramaphosa's delegation to go to the U.S. He even said it, that he was told by President Trump to bring my friends there. Bring my friends in. He invited them in. even after arrival in Washington, apparently, well, it's factual now, President Trump said, no, don't just bring them for a golf day or afternoon and dinner. Bring them to the meeting as well.
You yes. See,
he played them. He didn't give them a chance to plan properly.
But that's my point, though, that someone should have said, can we brief every single person that could possibly be asked a question? Because you have a ton of journalists in there. So you need to prep people for media. I thought it's power to the cause.
The minute President Trump informed President Ramaphosa to bring the golfers to the Oval Office. That minute, they should have taken 5 to 10 minutes of the time in between for a briefing, a quick briefing to say, in case this comes. I end up seeing Retief Khoosen talking about historical politics.
Yeah.
Some, it's embarrassing, I'll come to that.
And then, you know, when he said to America, you guys even helped us in Angola.
Yeah.
I'm like, what are you doing?
That was an insult.
I'm like, what are you doing?
And I don't know if people didn't pick that up. Retief Khoosen actually demonstrated that he's a racist apartheid activist. He thanked America, and President Trump was nodding his head.
Yeah.
He thanked America for helping the apartheid South Africa for killing Umkhonto weSizwe cadres
in Angola. Exactly.
And for me, that was an uppercut.
Mm. Understand? But hence, it goes back to what I'm saying, that a briefing makes sure that we avoid such. But yes, sometimes you're speaking off the cuff and from your heart. And speaking from your heart is where the true you will come out.
Yeah.
But if you're prepared, you are less likely to put your foot in your mouth and thank America for helping you in Angola.
Tato, you earlier on, and I agree with you. Let me just say I agree with you. But you earlier on asked me about my diplomatic background.
Yeah.
And of which some of the stuff is personal.
Sure.
I can talk off the cuff. I'm not in a government office. I'm not in an official visit. We are in a podcast, you know, in a studio. You started the show casually. It's easy to do that. But your mind, your level of IQ should tell you at that time, you are in the U.S. invited to come and deal. One of the things that's on the agenda is race relations in South Africa. Mm. And you bring the most painful part of race relations in. You understand? That's one element. The second part is, despite Retief, I actually had found President Ramaphosa talking more about golf, that I practice my swing. I even bought you a book that is 14 kilograms, and that book, the foreword and the preface are written by Khoosen or whoever, and what is the other guy, Johan Rupert.
Yeah.
I found that Ramaphosa speaking about golf. He's not a golfer. They're trying to drag him in there.
It's called Know Your Audience.
Yeah, that is fine. But then you find Johan Rupert doing what President Ramaphosa was supposed to do. Telling the truth about the country, telling about what is happening in the country. Look, I'm one of the people that people have said I'll get into trouble many times due to talking about Rupert, but I've never liked Johan Rupert, and it's political, it's not personal. I take him as a Boer boy who benefited from the apartheid system and is the richest man in South Africa, and he continues to be rich, and he's worried about buying for his grandchildren, about buying whatever for his house, for his children and safety. It's okay, but it's a benefactor of apartheid, and we cannot run away from that. You understand? Now, we are sitting in a situation whereby Johan Rupert stands there, and he doesn't talk golf. President Ramaphosa does it to defuse the situation, does it very nicely to make Trump to focus on golf and the golfers being there because he wanted golfers there. But then Johan Rupert goes and talks about political issues, security issues, issues that matter. He, in the middle of all that, he did three things. One, I did not appreciate the fact that Johan Rupert was even standing behind the president and pointing a finger at President Ramaphosa, saying, your predecessor, for me, that's one undiplomatic, and you are talking to President Ramaphosa like he's talking to his child. Your predecessor, we dealt with your predecessor refused these drones, blah, 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 blah. That's one. Two, Johan Rupert stands there and says, this government of the ANC, thanks to the GNU, they refused drones. those that we wanted to help. Now he was exposing the government. I like the honesty that he was saying there's violence generally in South Africa. He even threw, what do you call this guy, Steenhuisen, the DA leader. Mm. He threw the DA leader under the bus.
Sure.
So to be honest with you, Johann Rupert may be the most disliked person in South Africa by black people for historical reasons, but he was the most honest person in that room about the situation in South Africa. When he said to Steenhuisen, your party that you lead, it's leading Cape Town, where we both come from, where we live, there's more violence and killing in the Cape Flats than any other place in South Africa. And we tried to intervene, we tried to help, we tried to introduce drones. Of course, for them, it's for business.
Sure.
And the administration of President Zuma rejected those drones because they thought the Americans want to spy on us.
Mm.
You know, that was an, not to say John Rupert was honest, but I'm saying he presented an honest situation in South Africa to his friend Trump.
Mm.
And then the worst part of my observation, Tato, is the silence of the main political government delegations.
Mm.
Golfers, these old white people stood there and they started attacking Julius Malema without informing themselves.
Mm.
None of the people who were in that room, from the president to the delegation to the golfers, none of them could stand up and explain to Trump when he asked the question, why don't you arrest that young man who's dancing and singing, kill the Boer, kill the farm? Why don't you arrest him? None of them could stand up and say, one, the Bill of Rights.
Mm.
Two, there's a constitutional court ruling in this country for using former liberation songs or struggle songs like One Settler, One Bullet, Kill the Boer, Kill the Farm. There's a constitutional court ruling. It was easy for them to respond to that in front of them, not to upset Trump, but to put the position at none.
Sure. What did you think of how President Ramaphosa handled it, though? Because I like the fact that he said, where we come from, we're democracy.
Yes.
Yes, there might be a small party, but they're still within their rights to express what they want to express.
Exactly.
And every country, especially countries that are white countries, they all have a radical side of politics.
Of course,
they have right-wing radicals who are anti-immigrant, who are anti-brown people.
Yeah.
It's almost no different.
Look, I think he handled it extremely well, exceptionally
exactly.
well. Exactly. The statement was choking there.
Yes.
When he started saying, but Mr. President, we I didn't like the posture. He was seeming like he wants to explain a lot. We are a constitutional. You see, I look at those things, the body posture, the tone. And there were several times he was interrupted. He became a gentleman. In a battlefield, you're not a gentleman. You pull everything you have.
Again, know your audience.
Yeah.
I think President Ramaphosa was very measured and for a reason. Know your audience.
The constitutional democracy response and that there. Oh, he actually cut Trump short there. And I picked up when he said exactly what you are saying.
Mm.
As a government, because Trump was quick to say, but it's part of the government. It was like, yeah, but it's the opposition.
Sure.
And it's allowed. Even the DA used to be the opposition, and they were allowed to say whatever they want to say.
Mm-hmm.
So that part was handled extremely well. But then we go to Steenhuisen and the Cosatu lady. John Steenhuisen spoke like a typical politician. And let me tell you, wrong or right, clap hands to him. He went there to present the Democratic Alliance position. He was not apologetic about it. He put it on the table very clear. He was representing the DA and the minority white people in South Africa.
But love or hate the DA, they're very consistent. They're always in next election mode. They're always in, we're going to win another person, even if it's one person mode.
They think also like the media.
That. So they're very, very intentional.
They're very, also the media. Steenhuisen did not speak there as part of the delegation, as the Minister of Agriculture, because he failed to provide, for example, he could have countered Trump's stories and allegations and the U.S. admin allegations with statistics to say the number of farm murders has decreased in South Africa in the last few years.
Mm.
And this is where we are, this is where we were before. He could have mentioned that, not just to say, I'm the Minister of Agriculture. The missing person in there, and I think he was left out purposefully. I had to wish another puppet of the GNU, the PAC leader, and I'm calling me a puppet for personal reasons, the PAC leader should have been there to answer to the issues regarding the land.
Why is he a puppet?
Look, the Pan-Africanist Congress of ASEANIA is supposed to be an ultra-leftist, anti-imperialist, anti-racism party. And now to find yourself in the GNU and agreeing to policies that are anti the policies of your party, I call you a puppet of the GNU. But it's a story for another day.
Okay.
Now comes the COSATU. Before I go to the last part, the lady of COSATU, the only disappointment part is for him to agree with Johann Rupert. COSATU is supposed to be a union, or used to be a union, that is ultra-leftist. For her to agree with Johann Rupert, to even quote how they have engaged regarding farm matters and losing of jobs. You see, Tato, my only problem with this whole political setup is people leaving the country and going to the imperialists and their masters and the handlers and begging and saying, we have crime problems, we have unemployment problems, pardon me, we need your investors. How do you take your domestic problems that you must go and demonstrate?
This is how we are fixing this.
This is how we are fixing it.
Yeah.
Don't say help
not
us.
Not bus. But give us money.
You understand? We should be in the U.S. and say, this is what we have done to reduce crime in the farms, and we work with the farm communities, we work with them. That's why there's less murders. This is what we are intending to do in future. You talk about border crossings, illegal border crossings. In the last 7 years, what have we done? We have introduced drones in the last 3 months at our borders, especially notorious borders. We have, in the last 3 years, launched the Border Management Authority. And thanks to the support of the Canadians and the Americans, this is what we are. You talk about tangible things that we have done. Regarding the crime at the Cape Flats that Johann Rupert brought up, what have we done? At some stage, we deployed drones that were issued by our own military to detect gunshots, gun noises, fire. I'm not in the Cape Flats. Yes, it's a battle. We don't seem to be winning, but this is what we have done. You don't go there like a beggar and say, Mr. President, we have problems of unemployment. COSATU cannot say that to President Trump of the US, we have problems of unemployment, when COSATU is supposed to know what is the problem of unemployment in South Africa. Is the government not stimulating the economy?
Sure.
It's corruption. The third part, it's capital outflow.
Sure.
The same people, those golfers and their companies, they are making billions, if not trillions, of rands in South Africa through mining, through Checkers, ShopRite, and whatever, everything that Rupert and the Ackermans own, and the Oppenheimers, all of them. That money is not coming and reinvested in the country. You understand? It's outflow. It's going to London Stock Exchange. It's going to New York Stock Exchange. These are the things that COSATU should have brought to the table to say, if you can help us, the tariffs must stop, capital outflow. The capital must stay in the country. It will stimulate the economy. We can create more jobs. Don't come and tell us that America has, 600 companies for the last 100 years. They even know that it's 100 years. America has 600 companies in South Africa, and therefore, please don't take them away. And for me, they lost the opportunity there. You understand? To tell these golfers, these blue-eyed boys, to say, you are here talking about apartheid era events. You are here talking about you want to build a cottage for your grandchildren and you just need sex. But you are not telling President Trump that most of your money is sitting at New York Stock Exchange, it's sitting in London, it's sitting in Europe. Actually, they were not supposed to fight, but they should have been brave, brutal, and honest the way Johann Rupert was. And they failed to take the opportunity.
Because there was an opportunity, like you're saying, that I think it made sense to mention that there's at least 600 American companies operating in SA. But you could have spoken up that fact.
Exactly.
That because there's 600 companies, these are the employment opportunities.
Exactly.
That even if there was a problem in this country, there wouldn't be 600 companies doing business in this country in the first place.
Exactly. They would have left.
Yeah. So maybe learn from those 600 companies that are already in the country that it's actually South Africa is open for business.
Yeah. Another, my last observation with this that makes me very uncomfortable and unhappy.
Yeah.
And people are saying, you're going to bring race into this. Remember, it was not President Trump who gave, is it Losi or Lodi?
I think it's a Losi. Yeah.
Losi, it's Losi. Mm. So it was not President Trump, it was President Ramaphosa.
Yeah.
Who stood up and said, ah, but it has been too much. President, you know, I could see President Ramaphosa standing up. One, it was a lady. Two, it was from the union. Mm. And I think it was very bold and brave of President Ramaphosa to make a unionist talk. Mm. But my observation, Tato, this is very weird for me. This was a diplomatic international relations event. Mr. Minister Ronald, in inverted commas, Silence Lamola.
Yeah.
No word throughout.
Yeah.
You know, I call him Silence Lamola now. The Minister of International Relations and Cooperation, the head of the delegation, the actual head of the delegation of President Ramaphosa, sat in the briefing in front of the media and sat for call. Yeah. Nothing to and from. Hi, but guys, maybe. And then there's the second highest ranking person in there, Minister and the President, Kumbuzo Ntshavheni, nothing throughout. Then the third person, the most important in trade, the Minister of Trade and Industry, whatever, Ntate Pakstau, nothing. It looked to me like all these black people must shut up, don't go there and irritate Mlungu, Bass, Trump, keep quiet, the white golfers, businessmen will talk, because that's what actually happened.
Mm.
The actual government delegation, remember, these white people, and they are white. They are white. From Steenhuisen to the three golfers, they all spoke, and they all spoke for their business interest, their family interest. Another one was even telling how his grandmother, I think it was Huesen again, and they all speak. The government delegation, minister in the presidency, the minister of intelligence, the minister of trade and industry, and the minister of international relations are quiet. Didn't you find that weird?
Again, because you know your audience, and you know that you're dealing with a man-child that loves to be charmed, that loves to be spoken to, like, we love you so much, Trump. We'd all be orange if we had whatever you put on your skin. They know that audience.
Nah.
So you need to speak to him in language he'd understand. In fact, I'm surprised they didn't have pictures of cartoons to explain some of the things they were talking about. So if you know your audience, you'll speak to your audience like that. And you need to remember, as much as President Ramaphosa and President Trump are peers, you are still dealing with someone that needs to be charmed.
Yeah,
like you're saying, the big conversations happen behind the scenes.
Yes,
but in front of the camera, they had to be on a charm offensive. So I understand why they went the way they did.
Well, I hear you, and I don't think, for me, it's a compromise. We compromised too much, you understand? We went down too much because we cannot allow the main government delegation to not to speak. They didn't even speak less. You know, if you were saying, in order to keep the charm, to massage, yeah? President Trump and his ego, the white people will talk more and golf and casual and soft because there's cameras, but they can't be quiet. I have a problem with them being absolutely silent. Maybe they spoke behind the scenes. It's okay. But there's another element that I want to bring in. Can we sit down and reflect on this? Imagine if the president at this era, it was some Nkandla Jacob Zuma, and he's invited there, and he takes a delegation of Ivan Khoza, Kaiser Motaung, Dr. Khumalo, sports.
Yeah, but who is the president that he's addressing, though?
Even if it was, who's the black guy who was there? Barack Obama. But can you imagine? Zuma was there during Obama's time. If Zuma could have taken Ivan Khoza, you leave the rugby and the cricket guys out. Kaiser Motaung, you know, a friend of mine said it. I'm like, yeah, and you take Dr. Khumalo to go and make things a little bit easier because Barack Obama knows Dr. Khumalo. And then you say, this is the government delegation, we are going to engage Obama. This country will be burning today. But as you always say,
know your
read
audience.
The room, know your audience, no, and know the situation.
If Trump was an avid soccer fan, and we know that he loved Jomo Sono in the 80s, then you take Bra Jomo Sono.
Anyway, Tato, on a serious note, I just hope this visit,
it
will bear fruits. I think the relations have been, and thanks to, you know, to Johann Rupert, the in inverted commas Prime Minister of South Africa. I think the relation, look, it's clear. It's been honestly spoken. It is clear to all of us, anybody who still doesn't believe to this day that Johann Rupert has influence in governments in the world, particularly in South Africa, in England, and in the USA, then you are doomed.
Sure.
But it became clear that he played a very big role, and not now, not only for this meeting.
No, he was man of the match.
But, I mean, even before, you understand, to arrange this meeting after the fallout with Rasool and all those things, it's clear that Johann Rupert has been on board.
Sure.
And look, you have to give a man a credit. I don't agree with it. I don't agree that Rupert should influence. But, you know, what do they say? The one who pays the piper, the one who feeds you, controls you.
Yeah, the one who pays the piper calls the tune or something.
Yeah. And it's clear that Johann Rupert, the Oppenheimer families, I don't know what were the others. Okay, the others you said they were entertaining Trump. The Oppenheimers, the Ruperts, and the other ones who are funding, and I've always spoke about this, who are funding the two main political parties in South Africa, the DA and the NC, funding them heavily and openly. They are actually running and influencing politics in this country. And it has become clear and evident. You understand? Especially when Steen Hazen stood up and said to President Trump, Mr. Trump, my party moved from opposition benches to form part of government of national unit in order to keep that toy toying guy that we say we
out.
Must arrest.
Yeah.
And the former president, Jacob Zuma, if those two move to the union building, then there'll be killing of the farms. Now, Steen Hazen is now talking like a real white DA leader. There'll be chaos in South Africa if those two move in.
Basically, what do you feel he was saying? We're here to manage the blacks.
Yeah. No. Exactly what I say. We joined this black ANC that has been compromised to go and manage those rascals. You understand? And you know, I tweeted yesterday and I said, guys, I congratulate the Commander-in-Chief of the Economic Freedom Fighters, Julius Malema, for actually being on the global platform while he's not there. When people are sitting there and discussing him, and I say, when people are sitting there, I'm only disappointed with Julius with one thing, with his slogan in the EFF. You can't be sending 49 people out, man. Do more. 49, I said, make it 4,900. In future, make sure that next year it's 490,000 of them who are leaving, because we don't have a room in South Africa for racist people. We don't have a room for people who lie.
Sure.
We don't need that. We already have problems of poverty, landlessness, unemployment, and crime. We already have those things. But you go and you take 49 people because Malema was singing Kiss the Boer, Kiss the Farm, and they don't even know that the guy has long changed the slogan. You know, he said, we must kiss Bomisi, we must dance with them. And the whole quartet, the whole diplomatic rau-rau being caused by liars, by a few number of people, the Boers calling themselves Afrikaners, are the tiniest minority in this country, and they have nearly cost us diplomatic relations with the U.S. And that should be a matter of concern. But in closing this topic, there's another thing that also I observe politically and diplomatically on this whole thing. You know what happened in the USA on Wednesday? It's going to have a serious negative impact on us globally, especially when it comes to BRICS and how we are going. You see, Tato, this thing of being neutral, this thing of sitting on the fence and not taking position,
sure,
we are entering into the multipolar politics of the world, particularly the South Pole. We cannot be seen to be begging and being comfortable with the USA at the sacrifice of BRICS member states, of countries that want to join BRICS, that have an influence in world politics. The world is transforming, and we can't put a blind eye on that. Our bilateral relationship with the USA is very important, like
sure,
with any other country. But we cannot be seen to be sacrificing our multilateral engagements with SADC and AU and all of that for the sake of the USA. And President Ramaphosa did something very, very important along those lines. And that's the third element I applaud him. When he said, the Americans must understand that even if you kill AGOA, and you have good bilateral relations and tariffs with South Africa. South Africa is a member of SACU, the Southern African Customs Union. So whatever benefit we will get from the U.S., other member states of SACU, which is the Kingdom of Lesotho, the Kingdom of Eswatini, the Republic of Botswana, the Republic of Namibia. These four countries are members of SACU, because SACU is a five-member state.
Yes, sir.
It's common monetary area. They will indirectly benefit. Mm-hmm. And I think it was very crucial for us to raise those things.
Sure.
We cannot sacrifice SACU or SADC or AU or BRICS because of the Americans.
Absolutely.
You understand? That's very crucial. That I think us also playing, downplaying our court case with the ICJ, downplaying the situation in Israel and all that, we should not do that. Then it defeats our international or foreign policy.
Didn't you find it interesting how Trump himself almost didn't want to deal with the Israel issue?
Yes.
When Clement Magnatella asked him about his thoughts on the ICJ,
yes,
and all he said was, yeah, we'll see what the court says.
We'll see what the court says. The court hasn't ruled.
But then again, don't forget that within a month of taking office, Trump spoke about sanctions against people at the ICJ that were part of some investigation committee.
Yes.
So maybe he knows that we've already threatened them and we're not worried about them.
Remove the word maybe from your statement. You have it all. He was so comfortable to say the ICJ hasn't ruled.
Yeah.
They haven't said anything. Let's wait for the ruling.
But that's the same guy that said sanctions against anyone.
Yeah, but he has dealt with the ICJ already.
Yes.
He has dealt. The Americans realize we can't deal. We'll threaten South Africa. We'll deal with the ICJ. The ICJ people will start resigning or not making a decision on Israel. And that's how the USA operates.
But some people are even alluding to the fact that maybe things are icy between Netanyahu and Trump. I mean, the fact that he was in Saudi Arabia and Qatar a week and a half ago.
UAE,
But didn't even stop in Israel.
Actually, that's a highlight. That's one of the things I picked up. I think he is tired of Netanyahu. I think he's getting tired because he can't defend him forever. You understand?
Yes.
He can't defend Israel forever. People will say, you are playing double standard, Mr. President. And Clement Magnatella, I think he was there for the SABC or for EWN, I don't know. His follow-up question about Israel and all that, I think it was also a very good question. Good journalism skills there, and he didn't mince words. And Trump, again, avoided that. The first one, it was about the court. The second one is you are very busy talking to Vladimir Putin and Volodymyr Zelensky, but you are not doing the same with Netanyahu, you understand? And you could see, President Trump also, people think he's stupid. Yes, he may be childish, but you must see how he avoids answering questions.
Yeah, he deflects very fast.
He deflects and he goes to something. For me, that's a strategy. That's one of the plans. But the issue with Israel, the fact that he went to the Middle East, and he was there for a day or two, and he didn't mention or talk or engage Netanyahu, it must be telling something. If you look deeper, there must be something.
We are running out of time. We're going to need to wrap up. But do you think that possibly the tide is turning in terms of even the EU? The foreign ministers said they need to review the EU-Israel Association Agreement, which sets out the EU's legal and institutional framework for political dialogue and economic cooperation with Israel. Because based on how nothing is changing, it's almost clear that Israel have one mission.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what report says what. They have one mission.
Destroy Gaza.
We want to destroy Gaza and want to push everyone out.
Look, remember what is Trump's other alternative position. It's the Palestinians must be moved somewhere to Egypt and be refugees there, and Gaza or Palestine must be turned into a global, must be turned into a new Dubai, you understand? And he may be buying time for that to happen. But the EU, Tato, those who studied this, history better than me. The EU is a toothless dog.
Sure.
They will bark. Israel is not heavily dependent on the EU. Israel is heavily dependent financially and militarily, and we trade in countries like South Africa and the USA, you understand, with arms and everything. If this position or posture that is being taken by the European Union. They actually, in this past week, even terminated engagements of trade. They stopped to say they can't engage. If that could be done by the USA, it would be something. It would be a different ballgame.
It would be a different ballgame.
But because it's the EU, it's...
Because there's suggestions that at this rate, then before you know it, there need to be targeted sanctions against the IDF.
Yeah.
But how much are the IDF getting from the EU in the first place?
The EU can't afford to fund one of their supposed to be member state, Vladimir Zelensky, alone without America. Mm. Imagine Israel. Israel Defense Force. It's three times its budget and all that of Zelensky. Mm-hmm. So they won't be able to. It's minimal. So their decision, I think it's more paper, more making noise. But it is also important for global trends and movements. Mm-hmm. It's very important that for the East and Europe and Africa to start seeing the Israel's being isolated. Mm-hmm. It's slow. It could be done better. If America wants to stop the war against Palestine, they can stop it in days.
Yeah.
Trump can issue one directive to Netanyahu, just stop and stop now. It will stop. But it is not in the interest of them. I think there's a whole plan to wipe off the Palestinians, and the USA is right in front of this. Mm. It is the USA which is making that war to continue. It's not Israel. Sure. Israel is the tool used by the Americans. Mm. And that will be a best spot for the Americans to occupy there. Trump is a businessman. He owns hotels all over the world. He owns jets. And his friend Rupert, they even call each other my friend.
Mm.
Rupert goes and tells us, that we need Starlink. Blatantly so.
Mm.
We need Starlink. Zuma refused. We need Starlink now. I want to see how MTN, Vodacom, Cell C and others are going to react to that. I want to see what is going to be in the agreement regarding Starlink coming to put a satellite in South Africa. Are we going to bend our rules?
But word on the street is that already been looking at bending the rules for certain corporations before Starlink was even in the picture.
Yes, they've done that.
So apparently it wouldn't be a new thing, and it would just be a coincidence that Starlink are treated or painted with the same brush.
Because
I'm told that when it comes to tech and all things tech, there's been discussions already about loosening some of the prerequisites.
I can quickly tell you what are those prerequisites.
Yeah.
The CSI, it's one of them, you know, to say what the community service, what are you contributing? Training and buying your raw material and equipment from local companies. But that's where corruption and maladministration comes in. Because who will be the suppliers of those things? Political office bearers.
Sure.
Who will be CEOs of those small companies? Political office bearers or deployees of the ANC, maybe the DA at the moment. You understand? So, Tata, what politicians do is they bend and they don't amend the rules. They bend the rules, they start a practice before the big one come. I mean, Johan Rupert told us straight, we need Starlink in South Africa, and I can bet with my last cent, Starlink will be here, the rules will be bent, there will be no BEE, it will not be there, there'll be brown envelopes, there'll be people being given positions to be CEOs, there'll be black faces, there'll be buying goods from one particular company, then the money comes with the front door and goes out with the side door, not even the back door. That's what's going to happen. That's how capital operates. And unfortunately, our politicians are not seeing that. The opposition parties, Umkhonto weSizwe and EFF, are going to fight the tooth and nail. But it's going to happen. It's who's in charge is the one who pays the piper.
On that note, thank you very much.
We are
very out of time.
I'm frozen. This studio is cold. Yay!
Brother man, where do we find you online?
Botsangm@gmail.com.
Yes, sir.
And 083-884-7787 on WhatsApp only.
Yes, sir.
And then at Botsangm on social media handles, brother man.
Great stuff. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Wow, What a Week. Hashtag Politrix, coming to you from Amped Studios, downtown Johannesburg. We're home to over 80 podcasts on the African continent. Maybe yours could also be shot here. We're also part of the Africa Podcast Network. Email us at waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Shout out Trevor for all of the videography. We love your work. Pezulu Works. You're probably planning your wedding for this coming festive season. Trevor and his crew can turn your wedding into a movie. So hit them up. Shout out YBF for all of the behind-the-scenes shooting. And Keletso Modisa King is our executive producer. Till next week, have a wow week in spite of yourselves.